Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Sam Howlett and this week I'm joined by Jake Cunningham.
Hello.
And Jenna Hobbs.
Hiya.
This week we're talking about Ken Loach's first film since announcing his retirement, I, Daniel Blake. So it's the film that's got him back in the habit of directing, based on a script by Paul Leverty, who's written the past few Ken Loach films. The film is Ken Loach's usual style of social realism in the UK. But before we get on to that, we have a question. Which films would you like to see directed by Ken Loach?
Well, I think a lot of the more recent kind of big superhero films, I'm thinking Captain America Civil War, X-Men Apocalypse, Batman Superman, a lot of the issue has been down to the people on the ground during these films that just become collateral damage. And no one's actually thinking about the real people, all right, in superhero films. Because everyone's always focusing on the big guys in their suits that are controlling the world, you know? But you know who Ken Loach would focus on? He'd focus on the people on the ground.
The man on the ground.
Exactly. And who do you think the real heroes are?
I like it, Jake.
Yep. Yeah. So Ken Loach's Avengers 2022.
What would it be called?
I don't know.
I, Steve Rogers.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
I want to see Ken Loach direct Bridget Jones, the next one. Bridget Jones's Baby's Baby or something like that.
Oh, no, I like Bridget Jones, the next one.
They're getting lazy.
Yeah, well, I think that he'd give Daniel Cleaver a bit more of a conscience. We'd delve more into Colin Firth's life as a barrister.
Yeah.
I just think there's a lot more depth in Bridget Jones that people haven't discovered yet.
And we already saw in Baby that Colin Firth has become this kind of social justice lawyer.
Yeah, he's
as well.
Working for Pussy Riot, isn't he? So,
yeah,
go I think for it. That's what I want to see next.
And what would it be called? So Bridget Jones, the next one, directed by Ken Loach.
Yes, yes.
I'd like to see him do a Bond film. Budget Bond.
I Budget Bond.
No nice cars, no nice suits, just wearing like a Mac, walking down the road.
Yeah.
And it's Bond. The bad guy is the state.
Yes.
The government. The system.
And you've got David Cameron going... It is me, James, author of all your pain.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's get into it. I, Daniel Blake, it opened on Friday. How important is this film?
I think very important. I think this is stuff that we're reading about in the newspapers, and I know for myself, kind of ignoring more than I think is okay to ignore. And yeah, seeing it on film really brought it all home to me, what's going on at the moment in some parts of the country.
Yeah, I think actually... Northern England doesn't get represented on British cinema screens a lot, and for we're down in the southeast, it's not we don't see things like this in our cinema screens that often, and it can take you back, and it really does. I think it is an important film that a lot of people should be seeking out, particularly those of us that aren't more geographically aware of a lot of people's situations.
Yeah, I think this is a world away from where we are right now, like in our studio.
Oh, so definitely.
It was quite a shock to see this in a film, not in a news story. Yeah, so I agree. I think it's a very important film. Let's just go over the plot very quickly. So the film's about a joiner, Daniel Blake, played by Dave Johns, and he's told by his doctor that he's too ill to work, but then he's not ill enough to receive benefits. And the film's just really about people coping with the mess of the benefit system. So how do you think this will compare to other social realist films? Like, do you think it's different enough? Or do you think it's that same kind of slightly very kind of downbeat look?
Yeah,
unfiltered look at reality.
It is downbeat, it is unfiltered. I think it is a lot more melodramatic as well. I think it does go it to the worst places mm-hmm. that this system can go to, but I think a lot of the time that's what people need. Like, you need to really show people the worst of things to say, not necessarily this is everyone, but this is some people. And I saw Dave Johns on Twitter last night, some kind of troll account said to him, like, why are you doing this film? It's like this that's pretending to be an everyman film. And he replied saying, it's not necessarily an everyman film, but the events that happen in this film have happened to people.
And stuff like this is happening every day. Yeah, not to everyone, but also, you know, how far away are you? If something goes wrong, you can't go to work and you don't have people that you can rely on. You've got to rely on the state, and then the state isn't there for you.
And it does really give you a sense of realism as to how things do happen. Often, I don't know, you might see someone that's sadly homeless and you go past them and you might think, I wonder how that actually happened. And then this film really makes you think, it's actually really easy and quite simple how that happened. And it is just a massive failing of a person's system that is meant to be helping them.
We've talked there about you know, this is something that happens, you recognise it as being something that happens. Does everything in the film ring true for you guys? Like, do you see it as pure realism and pure, like, cinema in the way in its purest form, that there's no sensationalising it? It's all just very low-key, this is real, we're trying to represent life at its most real. Did it pay off for you
in that
way? I
think Ken Loach would want us to think that. But for me, I don't completely go with it. The most believable and best sections for me are Daniel Blake's frustrations. The smaller moments where you just get more frustrated than kind of like outwardly aggressively angry, maybe. So this kind of, I don't know, it's like the trial, isn't it? This never-ending sequence of getting online to fill in this form, to fill in that form. And like, there's the best moments are when he doesn't really know how to use a computer, know how to use the internet, and he's trying to fill in a form. And everyone knows the feeling of when you fill in something online that's taken ages, and then you click through to the next page and it says, error, you missed, like, please check
one
the box.
Point, yeah.
It's the most frustrating thing in the world.
Yeah, and you have to go back a page, and then you think, oh, and then you've got to fill in all of it again. And that makes us really frustrated, but it also makes us think how privileged we are that we can actually say stuff like, oh, this is the most annoying thing in the world.
Well, also that we're doing this for things that aren't really that important, like my ASOS order, and not for, like, you know, the money that's going to get me through the next few months.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the actors. I've mentioned him earlier. Dave Johns plays Daniel Blake. He's a comedian, I believe. And for me, he really carries the film. I think without him, this would be way just too uninteresting, I think.
Yeah.
I think you can really tell he's a comedian in his acting because he has this kind of charm and charisma to him.
Yeah, and it would be easy to just be a downbeat, downtrodden person. Mm-hmm. But the cruelty in the film is that he is relatively optimistic.
Yeah.
And I think, because Johns is a comic and he's got that timing.
Like, yeah.
Even if it's just like a wider-eyed look or a smile, he just is at the right time. And that's what makes you empathise with Blake.
He has some snappy lines as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is funny.
Yeah, I really liked him. But I also really equally liked the actress playing Katie.
That was Hayley Squires.
Yeah, I thought she was amazing. I thought she conveyed so many emotions in just a few looks. She had that kind of the downtrodden and the desperation in every shot of her. She just looked racked with worry at all times.
And she gets the big scene, I would say, and she handles it really well.
So we should say to people that haven't seen the film that Katie is a single parent that Daniel befriends in the benefits office, and they form this platonic relationship, which I thought was, again, something else that really carried the film mm-hmm. and elevated it above just being very downbeat social commentary. That there's it's something really human in this rather than just bleating about how the system's broken.
Well, they formed like a surrogate family for each other almost. Yeah. And the relationships that they formed made you kind of believe in people and that there are good things that still happen even in the darkest of times, I thought. And that kind of sense really carried the film through for me and made it much less depressing than it already was.
Yeah, I think they could have gone down the route of where Daniel Blake is completely isolated mm-hmm. and completely alone. No one is listening to him at all. So there's context given that his wife has died after an long illness. And he lives on his own, but he's surrounded by people he's friends with. So he's his neighbour, people from his work. And he's, as we said, he's so charming and friendly that he seems to be able just to talk to anyone. But they could have gone down another route with this where he's a complete loner.
Yeah, and I think perhaps we would have a perception that people that end up in situations like this may have a loner tendency.
Are reclusive. So the screenplay written by Paul Laverty. What did you think of the script overall?
I thought that the script was very on the nose. But as I said earlier, I think when films are trying to make a political point and they actually... Like, this film is not trying to make you read in the undercurrent of it and read what it's trying to say metaphorically. It is just outwardly saying the things it believes in.
Mm-hmm.
And although it is not subtle in any way, I actually kind of respect it for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. me too. It's brave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not trying to hide it through metaphor or layer it, just going for it. This is what we think. Mm. Let's just cut out all the... trim all the fat. Let's just go for it. And I think that pays off.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think there's times when it's a little melodramatic and sometimes you hear things that don't necessarily feel like natural dialogue, but I think you can forgive it for that because... It's doing something that's so great, and lots of the scenes are very natural. The relationship between all the characters feels really natural with Daniel Blake and Katie's two children. I do think it's great. I think at times it's a little melodramatic, but I think that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, there is some dialogue there's a number of times in the film where it feels like, I don't know, Ken Loach sound bites. Mm. And Laverty, I know they've written together before. Yeah. But probably this would be the most outwardly political film, and it's just there's bits where it's a little girl sort of saying like, "You helped us, Daniel, let us help you."
Which is kind of above her kind of level of thinking for her age, and it does feel like someone's fed her that line rather than it's natural. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and though that kind of dialogue fills a number of moments in the film, and plot-wise, it loses it for me in the more bleaker dramatic moments, like where it does take people to the worst possible outcome.
That just seems like it's trying too hard for me. Yeah. I thought that most the film was felt true enough and relevant enough without those scenes.
Mm.
But it's interesting to talk about the script though, because this has got Ken Loach out of retirement. So a few years ago, after The Angel's Share, I believe it was his last film, he said, "No, that's it for me, I'm done." And this is the script that's pulled him back in. So he must have seen something in it that really spoke to his nature, that you think, I'm the only person that can make this film, I have to do it.
Yeah, and it feels really current as well. Like, it was only shot October last year, which is the crazy thing. If it premiered at Cannes, which was May or June... So they would have only had a month, let's say a couple of months shooting, and then 4 or 5 months to turn around the edit. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so he must have just found some, like, early last year, maybe even a year ago, like, he found this script.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, because it feels like, at times, like a documentary.
Oh,
because
definitely.
It feels so right now, like we're watching a news report.
Yeah, it's so current. It's stuff that you're reading about in the newspaper all the time that he's showing on film, and I think that that's what's so important, and that's why film is important, because it brings these things to reality for us. You know, like things like the food bank. We all know that people going to food banks has risen astronomically in the past few years, and yet that's something that I don't think we've confronted. Well, I personally hadn't confronted the reality of. And watching a film where these people are going to a food bank really made me think about that. I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think as well that you say we see this on the news all the time, but then that's all it is for us. Mm-hmm. It's just something we see on the news, and it's happened. It's on so much now that we're not bored of it, but we're desensitized to it. It's just that's just life now. Yeah. For a lot of people, they just think, oh, that's just the way it is.
And we shouldn't.
And we'd rather watch news stories about Donald Trump saying something stupid than people in our own country actually suffering.
Yeah.
So I suppose this is Ken Loach's way of saying it's still going on. I can't believe I'm still protesting this, but here we go again. This is still happening. You need to be reminded that this is still happening.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is down to the kind of the look of the film as well. The cinematographer, I've forgotten his name, but he really kind of captures Blake as this integral part of the city as well. Mm. Like the way that they dress him, it's in this kind of like burgundy brown clothes, mm-hmm. and he almost looks like a brick. Like that, he almost like blends in with the buildings of the city. It's like, and it's kind of saying, I don't know, this could be one of anyone, but also this is a guy that's holding up the city, yeah. as could anyone else.
I think the city is really important in the film as well. It's important that it's set in Newcastle, and because there's a lot of the film is set with him walking outside, walking around, like you said, around the buildings, around these sort of work sites. So yeah, I think it's a very key part to this story, the city.
And the community comes across really well. You know, he keeps bumping into people who are supportive, who are friendly, who are nice. It comes across as a great place to be, which, you know, given the circumstances of the film, it might not come across like that.
Mm. There's a lot to discuss for this film in the spoiler section, I think, as well. So we're holding back a little bit at the moment. But just quickly, I wanted to talk about the fact that... So you mentioned earlier that this played at the Cannes Film Festival, and it actually won the Palme d'Or. The best film prize there, which I don't know, for me is a strange choice for this to win best film. Why do you think this?
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One best film at Cannes. Because the only thing I thought was that Cannes and Festival Awards should really usually award films that are different, that are new, that are fresh. And this, in terms of filmmaking, felt very old-fashioned and very simple. Which it's trying to do, but it's just strange to give this a filmmaking award when it's so simple and low-key.
Yeah. I would perhaps say that maybe the political climate in France at the moment had something to do with it, because they're in a very kind of similar situation that perhaps we are in, that things are, like, the conservative side of things is going further and further.
It is an international jury, though. It's not just the French jury.
No.
But I think that's the same for all of Europe. And America, look at it. We're moving more and more to the right, and we're becoming more and more polarised in political opinion, I think. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, and there could well be that. I mean, there is perhaps a larger liberal audience within the people that go to film festivals and cover them for press.
So you think it's a politically motivated award?
I'm not saying that's it, but...
Possibly.
Yeah, that could be something behind it, and I think it's a good statement by Cannes as a festival to award it this as well. I'm not. I'm completely fine with this having that award.
Me too. Having seen it now, I'm very actually quite. Yeah, it's a nice thing to say that Ken Loach came out of retirement and won the Palme d'Or with a really important film.
Yeah, and I don't think it's them kind of going, "Oh, it's Ken Loach. We better give him."
It didn't
award.
Feel like he'd. Like, it wasn't like a Leonardo DiCaprio where, oh, he hasn't had one yet, let's give him one.
Yeah.
Because, this is his second Palme d'Or, Ken Loach, as well, after the win that shakes the barley. It's also crazy that George Miller was the head of the jury who directed Mad Max Fury Road, because this is worlds away from George Miller films. But, again, I like that.
Yeah.
It's a nice little concept. Okay, anything you want to discuss before we go into spoiler territory?
No, I was trying to think of a joke, like Mad Ken... Furious.
It's good. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about how angry the film made me at times as well.
Yeah.
Like, really quite angry.
Mm.
But I think we'll get to that more in the spoiler section.
I think we will.
But I think it's quite rare for me to get angry at a film.
Yeah.
And I did. I was quite very sort of frustrated, annoyed.
And we watched it at 9 o'clock in the morning, so it really set us up for a good day.
Well, I thought about it all day, and I think that is the great thing about this film, is it keeps you thinking, and it doesn't let you forget.
Yeah, I almost want to encourage people to watch it during the day rather than at night, like, because you don't want to watch it and then go to sleep and forget it.
No, you need to think about this, and you need to bring it up with people as well, I think.
Didn't you say that someone said on the Twitter, oh, I saw Daniel Blake and told my friend about it at work, and they started crying?
Yeah, yeah. Those, like, who hadn't even seen the film, but just telling them about different moments about it, and even just hearing about it, and that brings that makes someone cry. Yeah. I think that proves how underseen this area of society actually is.
For me, it wasn't that it made me sad, just angry.
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely made me sad. I was a little bit of an emotional wreck when we left the cinema.
Okay, so that's I, Daniel Blake. If you haven't seen it yet. Please go out and do so, and then come back and listen to what we have to say about the third act stuff in the film. So I have some issues with the kind of spoilery stuff that we're going to talk about, mainly the ending, which I thought didn't do a good job of sort of carrying the film off. I didn't like it that he died. I didn't think that was a very good plot point.
Yeah, and I think you could see it coming from the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see it coming because I thought it didn't make this wasn't that film.
Yeah,
I thought the film was it's about Daniel Blake, but it's more about the welfare system. It wasn't necessarily purely a character study.
Yeah,
and having the film end with him dying just seemed it seemed slightly pointless.
I mean, is he a martyr?
Not really, because he didn't die for anything. Like, he doesn't even get to win, not beat the system, but he's about to triumph over the system in a way, and then just to kill him off before he gets to do that seemed...
I just don't think this film can have a happy ending. I think that there aren't that many happy endings, and I don't think that Ken Loach could give Daniel Blake a happy ending and make it seem like it was all okay, because it's not, and I don't think that's the story he wants to tell. So what's his options, really, other than to let Daniel die?
Well, for me, the worst ending would have been effectively to restart the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I think the retrial for his was it health check?
Oh, it doesn't go well.
Yeah. And or it does go, bless you.
Thank you.
It does go well, but then he has to fill in another thing online, or just leave us with the idea that Blake is stuck. Mm-hmm. In this system, and it's torturous to just remain in it and just constantly going round. And it's not like I'm saying, like, oh, him dying was the easy way out, but it's for me not as actually infuriating as if he was left in it.
Well, because he's escaped it in some way.
Yeah.
But then it makes you think for Katie. You know, Daniel was the only person that Katie had.
Yeah, now she's completely alone.
Yeah.
But I think Daniel kind of gave her something.
He
like effectively gifted her a bit of belief, even though he was failed by it. And he gave her a bookshelf.
He did. Beautiful bookshelf.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Lovely. Lots of wooden fish.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think that it should have ended with him saying the speech himself in the appeals office. and then end there before you hear the appeals decision. I just think that would have been it would be nice to end as it started with Daniel.
Yeah.
I think that's too hopeful, Sam. You know, you hear that speech, which is really rousing, and you think, of course these people are going to listen to that. And then what? They do, and everything's okay, and it's packaged up nicely. Or they don't, and he's back stuck in the system again.
Or what about in the loo, and he's like looking at himself in the mirror just before he goes into this trial, and you just kind of see him have a little stumble.
And you don't go for all the funeral and all that.
Yeah, part. And you don't know. Well, it's like, could that be a heart attack? Did he just trip? The Inception. This is why we need Ken Loach doing blockbusters. Christopher Nolan's I, Daniel Blake.
I just, for me, when you kill a character off, it is a bit of a easy way out. How do we end this film? Let's just kill them.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to wrap up their story. It's wrapped up for you, by them being dead.
Yeah. I did quite like how unceremonious it was, that you don't actually see him die. And they just go in and he's like just at the bottom of the frame and he's being crowded round. And I like this idea that suddenly everyone is around him and everyone is trying to effectively care for him at this point, and he's completely overcrowded by them, and we don't even see him in this final moment, really. He's just completely covered.
So we've mixed opinions then about the ending of the film, but do you want to just go through some standout scenes for you guys?
Yeah, I think there's one big scene that we all can all agree on.
Yeah.
The food bank?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Amazing writing and amazing acting from Hayley Squires.
Yeah.
And that's seeing people at their lowest, I think, that I haven't seen in a film before.
Yeah, and so this is in this... Well, I mean, if you're listening to this section of the show, you've seen the film. But, you know, the scene where both of them go to a food bank and they're walking around and Katie is filling up shopping bags for food for the kids and... then just
she's just possessed. She loses control of her body and her mind and just pours out the spaghetti in her hands and just starts eating it raw from her hand, and she just doesn't know what happened, why it happened. She's just completely overwhelmed by hunger and poverty. That was the most emotional scene, I thought, as well.
It was very, very hard to watch that scene, because you don't often see people at that level of vulnerability, as you know, that she just had absolutely no control of herself, and it's so humiliating for her and so difficult for us to watch. I almost had to turn away.
Yeah, and earlier in that scene actually has probably one of the most hard-hitting lines of the whole film. It's just she's walking around the food bank and she just kind of whispers to the lady that's helping her, saying, do you have any sanitary towels?
Yeah,
it's not something I'd thought about before, but it's
They tackled that issue very well.
Yeah.
That was one of, like we talked about some of the dialogue being a bit off and a bit soundbitey, and that just felt so intimate and personal and just
and real.
And sharing that in a public space as well, you can tell to what level she's been brought down to.
It just strips away all of your dignity, and you know you can't afford to have any pride in this situation.
Yeah. Well, they were they had the premiere in London on Wednesday night. And they did the red carpet with kind of facts and statistics based on events in the film. And the one that Hayley Squires was carrying was that 1 in 4 single mothers has gone without food to feed her children. And so we were saying, like, there's stuff in this that feels a bit melodramatic and a bit like taking people to their lowest point to really ram the point home. But that's a quarter of that single mothers.
Definitely.
So it's not actually that lower demographic.
No, not at all.
So we talked a lot about how kind of points in the film are very hard to watch because they're so real and just completely depressing to us. But there's also a lot of hopeful moments in the film, a lot of uplifting moments. There's a lot of sort of smaller characters. So, like, there's one woman in the benefits office who really wants to help Daniel.
Lovely Anne.
And then Katie attempts to steal from the shop, the manager lets her off, lets her take the thing she's stolen. And even the scene that I really liked, I don't think you are quite on the same page, is the graffiti scene.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really nice moment.
I like Blake doing the graffiti and just sitting there.
Yeah.
Because he, throughout this film, he has been this silent, stoic protester. Mm-hmm. And he only speaks in that moment when people actually come up to him. And he's sitting there and he says what he's done and why. And I liked him in that scene. I just didn't like the guy that's shouting afterwards.
Yeah, that felt very much fed in the kind of anti-Tory Ian Duncan Smith chat, which is, you know, valid points to be raising, but it felt like those words were just put in that man's mouth rather than it being natural.
Well, because it seemed like he seemed like a real person that was actually not supposed to be in the film.
Yeah.
That he just sort of wandered into this situation and thought it was real and just sort of almost drunkenly sort of shouted, rambled. But I liked that because it felt real.
Yeah, I mean, that scene really blurred the line between this and documentary because there were shots that you were just... I was questioning how this was being made because it felt so like a hidden camera or something. It felt just like watching like that Daniel Blake was doing this thing. They might just have had one camera guy and it looked like he was just filming this guy doing graffiti and the rest of the street hadn't been closed off and people were hollering and cheering. Because it felt like that. It felt like you were in this situation and you were an onlooker.
Yeah.
Anything else?
One issue that I did have is that I didn't like the kind of demonisation of the call centre workers or the job centre workers.
Did you think they were being demonised?
Other than Anne.
See, I didn't necessarily have a problem,
I didn't have a problem with
them. And because I don't necessarily... feel like it was their fault, you know. It felt kind of Orwellian with this, like, the decision maker. And it felt like they were kind of powerless. They need a job too, you know. Who really wants to be doing that job?
Yeah, this was it. Like, I didn't get the impression that anyone was saying that they're just doing their job as well, other than Anne, who is this, like, saintly figure. Like, I just felt...
Yeah, you've got Anne versus Sheila.
Yeah, and, like, Dawn Sheila and the Sheila character and the manager character, they just came off with a disdain for Blake, and I agree that this is part of the system and that actually they have just been trained and managed to ultimately have the opinion that what Blake is doing is bad.
Yeah.
But because I did work in a call centre for 3 years and I was on the other end of that kind of thing, and it was just frustrating. I know it's frustrating for the person calling up, but it's so bad to be like, because when someone does get through that has been in a queue for an hour and a half, I'm just thinking I feel terrible for the person that's got to answer that phone, because you know all they're going to get is just an earful.
Yeah, but I do also think, you know, the people in the job centre, they have to deal with, you know, like this we're saying, is that Daniel Blake is one in thousands of people that, you know, they're dealing with this all the time. Can they really care about every single case? How do they make it through the day?
Yeah.
And so I didn't necessarily think that the film was trying to paint them as bad people. Yes, it's frustrating from Daniel's point of view. Yes, it's frustrating. But actually, I didn't even think that he was that angry with the people there. It's above that. It goes way further.
Yeah, and they've been trained to have a detachment.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I put those scenes in the benefits office were really well done, actually. With all the, you go there and there's the same people still there.
Yeah, and at one point Blake stands up and another kind of portly gent who also has a bald head and similar coat
sits in the same seat, yeah. Nice little touches like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so should we wrap it up there?
Yeah.
Final thoughts on the film then, guys?
Do make the effort to watch this. I know a lot of the time, if a Ken Loach film comes out, like we've said this before,
I probably wouldn't have chosen to go and see this.
Yeah, this isn't a blockbuster that you're going to go for some escapism. But
I'm glad I have seen it.
Yeah, it's a very difficult film, but I think it's really important that you watch it. You're not really going to enjoy the experience of watching it, but I think that it's
important that you see it.
Yeah, and talk about it.
And if you... do get a taste for Ken Loach's films after seeing this. If you go on Curzon Home Cinema, Spirit of 45 and Root Irish are both on there, along with Versus, the documentary that came out earlier this year about Ken Loach. And another big thank you to CSR for letting us use their studio once again. So, that's goodbye from Jenna.
Bye.
Goodbye from Jake.
Bye.
And goodbye from me. See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.